The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2009. This is episode number 176, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today bringing you the best in motorcycle road racing coverage. So, got a big, giant, long call today, and we're going to jump right on into that here in a second, because I talked to Jules. We did a wrap-up of the Jerez racing weekend. Really, really good stuff. I hope you managed to catch the race on Speed Channel or on the internet or Eurosport or wherever it is that you're lucky enough to watch MotoGP racing, because the MotoGP race was good, satisfying for a MotoGP fan. We're going to talk about that, Jules and I. But the 250 race was phenomenal. So if you haven't seen the 250 race, we do talk about it towards the end of the call and everything. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of warnings about spoilers coming up. So just sort of be ready for it. If you haven't watched it, you got to watch it. Good race. 250cc's at Jerez. MotoGP race at Jerez was also excellent. But the 250 race blew it away. All right. Before we get to all that, we're going to have a really cool call with Peter Lenz. Now, Peter Lenz is a racer, and he's 11 years old. He's racing in the USGPRU National Series and Weir West. And this is an 11-year-old guy. He's racing against adults. He's got a phenomenal record, 9 national championships, 9 regional championships, 1 provincial championship with 125 wins and 35 additional podiums in 3 years of road racing. This guy's got a lot of talent, and we're going to be seeing more and more of him. So Jules gave him a call and talked to him and talked to his dad a little bit, and we're going to be doing it in 2 parts. So the first part that we're going to hear is talking to Peter, and then at the end of the show, we're going to be talking to his dad a little bit. So let's listen to that here real quick. And then after that, we're going to get into the phone call with Jules. And like I said, it's a big, long show, but I think you guys are going to enjoy it, this show, because MotoGP season has started. There's a lot of talk about a lot of great stuff, and we're going to be keep going on and bringing it to you here as the weeks progress.
Okay, we've got Michael and Peter Lenz on the phone, and Peter is an 11-year-old racer extraordinaire, and Michael is his proud dad. So, how are you doing, guys?
Hey, doing okay.
Cool.
Very well, thank you, Jules.
All right, and you guys are up in Washington State, right?
Yeah, we're in Washington. We're north of Portland. Just a little bit above the border. That's in Vancouver. That's pretty much it.
Next to a 400-acre working dairy with cows and sheep and horses and such.
Do you guys get to motocross out there?
Yeah, we got 5 acres to motocross on.
Sweet, sweet. So, Peter, you're 11 years old and you have 9 championships. How does that add up? How many championships are you in a year?
I don't really know what he's gonna check. I think, but it feels really cool to be like where I am at 11, and a whole lot of kids don't really get to be where I am at right now. So
I think a lot of adults don't get that.
Yeah, that too.
And you're on a Aprilia 125 now, right?
Yeah, Honda RS125.
Oh, you're on the Honda. Okay, and when did you start riding that?
The end of last year, October, I think. Yeah, it's so much fun. It's just a whole lot faster than any other bike, so it just makes everything, like, faster, and I've always wanted to go faster, which makes it really good. So, yeah, just the whole concept's just awesome. I like the minis were okay, but this is awesome.
Because before that, you were racing pocket bikes, mini bikes, I believe. And what was the last bike that you rode before the 125?
My CRF-150 from a motocross bike. It's stuck in an RS chassis.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Actually, I think your dad was mentioning that on one of the forums that I read.
I've had the feeling of the bike. It's just, like, I've had the feeling of how the bike goes and everything, but now, after all that, it's just, I can actually, like, it's pretty much just, you have the concept of the bike, and then you just stick, like, more speed into it, and then that's what you have for a 125.
Right, because it's the same chassis and handling and that stuff.
Who does all the work on the bikes?
Big B Racing, a friend of ours. His name's Brian Enns. Sort of a friend and tuner.
Does that include, like, suspension and stuff like that?
No, actually my dad does suspension.
Well, we got some help from Mike.
Yeah, Mike Basica, he's an instructor at the Super X School.
And he works for Catalyst Reaction.
Oh,
so
okay.
They're shortening suspension lately, but he's running Traction Dynamics 20mm cartridges in the Ford.
Are you a Colin Edwards fan, by any chance?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I talk to him every once in a while, but yeah, big fan. I'm glad how he's doing. Really bummed out about Japan, though.
I think he is too.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking is because you're running number 45, which he ran for a little while in MotoGP. But is there a connection?
Yeah, I started out on motocross. I didn't know he ran 45. That's just a number I picked out. But when I went on to road racing, when I started watching like the videos and all that, and on TV and everything, I saw that he was running 45, and I was like, hey, that's really cool.
Nice.
And it just went off from there.
Cool, cool. Who's your favorite racer?
That'd be Colin, but yeah.
So you've been to Europe to race, I believe, right?
Yep. We went over there when I was about 8. We were visiting BMS, Bunchy Motorsports, which was their sponsor at the time. I was on a pocket bike race team. So we went over there, and they had their 06 bikes ready, and me and a teammate of mine were riding over there. I got 31st in France, and a 2nd there, and then a 4th and a 6th in Spain. Out of like 30, 40 riders.
That's amazing. And in Europe, you know, those guys start early too, so that is pretty good.
I think that was my first year on the bike, on the pocket bike, on any road bike anyways.
Really?
Because I started on dirt.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay, you've got some crazy lean angles in some of the photos I've seen.
Well, basically, I learned everything at the California Superbike School, like how you get your elbow down, why you get your elbow down, and what it affects the bike, and a whole bunch of other things, and what it does when you do that, and it's just, it helps everything just click in, and you know what to do whenever something goes wrong, or when you just need to do it, and that's just knowing what to do, it becomes instinctive and all that.
Yeah, you're probably not even thinking about it. You're just thinking where the track is going and stuff. So, you know, what's really just weird is that I'm hearing the voice of an 11-year-old kid, but you're talking like, you know, a seasoned racer. Well, then you've been racing half your life, right?
I started out when I was 4, so...
More than half. Wow.
So a little longer than half my life. So.
And which track do you ride at the most?
That's hard to say. Probably Streets of Willow right now.
Yeah.
Maybe Las Vegas, but definitely Streets. For right now, anyways.
And which is your favorite track?
I like,
Laguna Seca.
Yeah, Laguna
Seca. It's got to be Laguna Seca. Come on.
Yeah. we went riding there with the cow for a superbike school a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really? You took the 125 there?
Yeah.
You know, this is something I don't understand, is that why the GPs don't bring the small bikes there. That's a perfect track for smaller bikes.
Yeah, no, they should, like, move the AMA over and bring over the other bikes and everything.
Totally agree.
But they should bring back World's Superbike and all that.
Oh, yeah. I'm missing those guys big time. Well, I have like one question left, which is, you mentioned that you played video games. What's your favorite video game?
Oh, I play this or that, but I really like MotoGP 08.
Oh, you do?
That is really cool game. Yeah, the graphics are awesome on the Xbox.
You know what I found though? I don't know if you noticed, but if you play with the manual transmission, you can cheat. Because this is terrible. I shouldn't be telling you this, but anyway, if you shift down into first gear, you can slow down without taking any of the penalties from like hitting the brakes. So you can go, you can be going like 200 miles an hour and ding 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 ding, just shift into first and you just slow right down.
Yeah, it's also like when I was playing 08 and stuff before I went to Laguna, that totally helped. But let me tell you this, it's nothing like the actual track.
Oh, I know. I realize that. But it is, for you know, a lot of people, that's like the only way you get to try some of these tracks. I mean, you know, Nicola Canepa at Motegi, he was playing a PlayStation 2 and trying out Motegi because he's never really ridden it. So, you know.
Yeah, it gives you a basic concept of the track and everything, so at least you get the basic idea of the track.
Yep. Do you do any other games besides motorcycle games?
I play Call of Duty a little bit.
A little bit?
What's that? What game?
Call of Duty 4.
Call of Duty 4. You play it online?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's pretty intense. Michael, what's it like, you know, being the dad of Peter and, you know, there's obviously the great, you know, the great pride he must feel because he's very accomplished, but also, like, you know, he's racing motorcycles.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know, because obviously there's as you point out, a lot of pride in the fact that he is accomplished as he is, but it's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
When you know, he's going out there, and you know, a lot of times people think that I'm pretty standoffish in the pits, and honestly, it's that I'm a nervous wreck, and you know, it's the fact that my 11-year-old. Soon to be 12-year-olds out there doing a, you know, $120, $130. And, you know, I guess it's not so bad when you look at it and say, okay, well, he's been riding since he's, you know, 4 or 5 or what have you. But it gets pretty emotional, you know. And, you know, it's a pretty, pretty far extreme when like at Laguna, he crashed in turn 10, you know, just, you know, tucked the front and that was pretty quick. You know, and there's those moments, and then when he won the, you know, USGPRU race, you know, like 2 weeks ago, being 11 in the USGPRU race and actually winning it was pretty intense as well. You know, but yeah, it's pretty neat, and it's definitely a lot of work and a lot of dedication, and you know, people see me at the track, but it's the whole family, you know, his sisters and his mom at home, you know. Taking care of everything else that's going on.
Is does he listen to you, or is he like his own guy?
It depends what you're talking about. I mean, when he comes home, he's just another one of the kids, you know.
I mean, I meant on the track. Sorry, I meant on the track.
Oh yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is that quite frankly, he's got more seat time than I do. I have freeway miles, but track miles, he's got more than I do. And then also, it's kind of like when he started going to the superbike schools, when I wasn't able to coach him anymore. You know, there's a certain point that I was able to coach him when he's on POC bikes and minis. And then he basically exceeded my eye. And kind of when I was talking to Keith Coates and explaining it, and I'm like, he's doing stuff, and I know it's not quite right, but I can't pinpoint what the actual cause is. I can identify with the end result, but I don't know how to correct it, right? And that's basically when I stopped really coaching him and just kind of got professional help.
Right.
So, but for example, when we were at Firebird, I helped him, walk the track on Saturday night and kind of just be a sounding board more than anything. I mean, he knows what he needs to do. It's just, sometimes he forgets.
And how's he doing in school?
At the moment, he's doing really, really well. And I say at the moment because he just got back from being off for a couple weeks because we were traveling, so he's got a lot of makeup work. But generally, it's, A's and B's.
Cool. Peter, what is it like interacting with kids in school when you're gone for a few weeks and then you come back and...
Oh, same as stay there the whole week or 2 weeks or whatever. They don't really, notice that I'm gone. Well, some of them do. It's just I text them or I email them, and that's pretty much it. Keep in contact during the whole time.
Do they come out and see you in, local races and stuff and cheer you on?
If you describe local, which may be 12 hours,
nice.
I don't
nice.
Think so.
Yeah, the closest race this year was, Button Willow?
Or 14
Vegas.
Hours?
Yeah.
No.
So we're in Southwest Washington State, just north of Portland, as Peter said in the beginning, but, we're a good 14 hours from the closest race.
Well, so you've never been to PIR?
No.
Well, I guess
he's actually not old enough to ride at PIR.
I actually have ridden in the parking lot.
Yeah, pocket bikes don't count.
All right. Anything else you guys want to tell me?
I spoke in my mind, but yeah.
So we actually news of the day is that we actually set up a fan of Peter Lenz page on Facebook.
Oh, right on. Okay. Well,
yeah.
We
haven't told Peter about it yet. We'll show you later. But we'll put a link up on his website at peterlenz.com, and obviously put a link up to the Facebook. So we had a few people asking just to kind of stay up to date what's going on a little more, Web 2.0 than just the website. So.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much for your time. I would love to be able to check in with you guys from time to time and see how Peter's doing this year.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great talking to you, Peter.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks, Michael.
All right.
Take care.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. Got Jules on the phone. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. Cool. Had a good race weekend. That was fun. Fun stuff.
Yeah. It was a good racing weekend and just a good weekend all around. I got to meet Jules from Australia, the other Jules from Ride On 2. He's in town.
Oh, cool.
So we were hanging out this week, and he's a very nice guy, a very cool guy, and he's traveling with his wife around the world, and this is their second stop. They went to Hawaii first, and they're hanging out in San Francisco for a little while. They're taking off on Friday, and they're going to go to South America. And I think they're taking 360 days. So sounds like an amazing trip.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So you hadn't actually met him face to face before?
No, I mean he started Ride On 2 back in 2003, I think, or 2004. Then the forums got started, a real forum got started. It was basically mostly a blog, and then a real forum got started in 2005. And Jim Race, myself, and Heidi Kenter became moderators on the boards, and then I ended up taking over the server, running the server, and but we never actually met.
Yeah. Huh.
So you know, all these years we've been fans of MotoGP and talking about it, and it was cool to finally meet.
Well, that is cool. Yeah. So right on. All right. Yeah, I I don't have any cool stories like that to relate. We did find out the source of our noise last week. I'll mention this. A couple of guys, George Ninisto and, somebody else sent us an email about the noise
Martin,
that we
well,
had.
Martin mentioned it too.
Martin mentioned it too. So we had several people mention it. And thanks a lot, guys, for that. I never actually even knew that, but it was a cell phone. I had my cell phone sitting on the desk, and basically if the cell phone's searching for a signal, it's making enough brain-cooking radio waves, as George Ninisto described them, that it gets picked up by a microphone. So apologies for that.
and it won't happen again.
My cell phone is actually turned off and in another room because I'm pretty heartily sick of it today anyway, and let alone that I don't want it screwing up the recording.
Cell phones must die.
Yes, they must live and learn. All right. Let's talk about MotoGP. Why don't we go ahead and let's talk about MotoGP first, the MotoGP race there at Jerez, which we got our predictions too. Do you have yours in front of you, Jules?
I got them. I have them up.
I wrote mine down, and I was thinking as I was watching the race, it's like, you know, yes, well, maybe not. And whatever. This race was a good race. I had a great time watching it. Wasn't the absolute, be all and end all of jumping up and down, freak out
it
for
wasn't
a solid
barn burner.
45
like,
minutes.
I actually expected more of a barn burner, but it wasn't. Although I have to say that I was ecstatic, not just because of the result, but also just because I just didn't think the result was possible. I really did not think it was possible. After watching QP. So, we made our predictions before we even saw free practice. But once we saw free practice and QP, this is the first weekend. This is the first race where we had good weather. And even though it was fairly cold in the early sessions, in general, it was a good weekend where everybody was actually really getting a good setup.
Right. Dry setup out there all the time. And even if it was, cool, at least, it was sunny and dry. Yeah.
But after qualifying, and seeing that Rossi's three rivals, Danny Pedrosa, Lorenzo on pole and Pedrosa and Stoner next to him, and then, Rossi behind and next to Depuñé, which is always fun.
Yeah,
it was looking bad. I was imagining that Pedrosa and Stoner would just have their usual launch starts, and then Jorge would be in third, and then Rossi would have all this work. And basically, that's actually what happened.
I was going to say, as it was kind of like that for the first couple laps.
Yeah,
laps.
But what I was really worried about was that Stoner, who has. It is a bogey circuit for him, and just watching him through both qualifying and free practice, he was not comfortable in certain parts of the track. He was sliding the bike way too much, and I was thinking, man, he's going to make a mistake, and whoever's behind him is going to get slowed down, and that means Danny Pedrosa will get away. So my like gut feel, and it's kind of what I went with, I think, on the fantasy game. Was that Pedrosa was going to win. But then during warm-up, Rossi pulled out, I was just thinking like, okay, the only thing that could possibly change this game plan was if Jeremy Burgess and the crew did some kind of a miracle in warm-up. Like, they've done this before, so it's not out of the question, and they did. I mean, he was, I think, 0.3 seconds faster than anybody else in warm-up. Granted, some riders are not going to be pushing all the way, but he was, and he had a really good time, Rossi, and so they did a minor miracle there, and then we went back to round two, and I changed it to Rossi winning, which was a good move.
See, I'm old school, hardcore, and everything. I think the prediction shouldn't be you can't change him that late. I know that's the rules though.
Well, you got to go by all the info you can.
Betting, what's that?
Yeah. Okay.
In any case, though, yeah, the race was excellent. Rossi again, he's that's always been one of his somewhat of a if he has a weak spot, it's the qualifying. You know, he typically mm-hmm. isn't always counted on to be the best qualifier or the best starter, and he's working on both of those things overall.
Yeah, and he needs to.
Yeah,
with exactly. These guys, I mean, with these guys, it's like, you know, you could lose a race right in the first corner if you don't. Don't do it right.
Yeah, exactly. In some ways, the way Jerez is laid out, I mean, this, you might disagree with me on this, but it's almost like it might be better to be in fourth on the grid, so you're right behind pole position, rather than third on the grid, where you're, you know, over far off on the wrong side of the track and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and almost as far back as the fourth spot guy, you know? So it's not like you're gaining a distance big advantage or something like that. I've always kind of wondered about that a little bit, that it seems like sometimes you see the guy from the second row, that, you know, as long as they can get a good launch, that they're already in the sort of the lane in the, in, you know, right on line basically. And, it just sort of seems to be of a benefit, but, and that's what happened this race. I mean, he didn't get the whole shot, but, yeah, like you said, he just put in a very, very classic Rossi performance. Started once he got past Lorenzo, who was holding him up a little bit.
Yeah, Lorenzo's pace was a big surprise. It's almost like he got sabotaged or something. I mean,
I'm just joking.
I mean, he was nowhere near the pace that he had during the other sessions, and he had to really struggle.
Right. Did you read I think it's the official press release. Unfortunately, I don't have it right in front of me, but he was basically, you know, something about the warm weather made the bike just not behave correctly. And who knows what that was. Both Stoner and Rossi complained that they couldn't get the tires they wanted. So maybe it was a similar issue with Arento, something like that, along those lines. And it was just,
and I love hearing that, by the way, that's really a good, like if we're going to have the single tire rule, I want to hear these kinds of things. I want to hear guys like Rossi and guys like Stoner complaining that they don't have the right tire, because I want, if it's going to be single tire, then I want everybody to have equal tires, you know?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. It's fair. If you're going to have the rule, then yeah. And not exactly sure why Bridgestone brought the two compounds that they did bring, because, you know, we knew it was a newly surfaced track and it was going to be really, really hard on tires. So I'm not sure why they didn't bring.
I think there was some possibility of rain in the forecast, I think, or cool weather, basically. So I think that maybe they wanted to bring a wider range.
Went just, down a notch on softness or something. Yeah, yeah. Because they both Stoner and Rossi basically felt that their fronts weren't hard enough.
Yeah,
They were going with the hard selection that Bridgestone had brought, but it still was not hard enough.
Right.
And it did seem to affect, Pedrosa, I think, towards the end of the race. Seemed to have some problems.
Well, so, you know, my theory with Pedrosa, I'll continue to say it, is that he and both the engineering of the bike and the setup of the bike, everything basically is geared towards the first two-thirds of the race, including his physical output, too, and that he starts to fade towards the end of these races because he just runs out of steam. He has to change to a different mapping. He uses up all the fuel because basically the way he wins races, he just gets away in the beginning and builds a gigantic, insurmountable lead, which
right.
he was on his way of doing, it looked like.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was going to be like that. I was a little bit discouraged in the very, very first part of the race with like, oh, God, it's going to be one of those. But it totally didn't turn out that way at all.
But the truth is that, you know what? His pace didn't drop off that much. It was just that Rossi kept upping the pace. So it made Pedrosa looked like he was falling back, but he wasn't really falling back. He was just not going faster, whereas Rossi was
not keeping up as much as not dropping back.
Yeah,
take a quick look at his lap times. But you're right. I mean, you know, they
dropped him a little bit, but it wasn't like
not a drastic fade off. No. I mean, yeah, his first four. Well. Yes, laps 2, 3, and 4, he was in the 139s, and then steady 140s, and then a few 141s. But you're right, it wasn't like some horrific fade. Huh. Interesting.
I still think that that knowing Pedrosa's, you know, I don't want to say lack of, but he's not the most talented racecrafty rider. He's not exactly the most you know,
mixing it up. He's not a
he's not the guy who's going to mix it up very well. And no. so I think the strategy has to be for him to get away and just put a gap in. So I mean, there'd be no reason not to like put everything into the start of the race and get it going as long as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, it makes sense for him anyways. He gets fantastic launches and all of that. And when he does break away, he's good. But
yeah,
you're right. And Stoner, we've often said the same thing about, but in this race, I think he did an excellent job.
No,
as far
I think with Stoner, if he gets away, he's gone. You know, if
he gets away, he's on that pace. He prefers to be out there setting the pace, and he can just set this incredible pace by himself. But but he doesn't seem to have a problem mixing it up.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he actually showed that quite a bit here because he did have a couple of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to go lap by lap or what, but I mean, you know, in a nutshell.
So let's just go down the standings. You know, first place was Valentino Rossi, but he really was far behind Pedrosa. How far behind was he at one point? I think he was like 3 seconds behind.
It was a ways because he picked up a lot of it in one lap, something like 0.8 in one lap. But he was when Pedrosa had a moment and Rossi had a particularly good lap and he just closed that gap. But yeah, it was somewhere in that neighborhood at one point that he was that far behind.
But then he was catching him and catching him and catching him in lap 17. He just pounced on him. And, you know, Pedrosa didn't exactly, you know, just say, okay, go ahead. He really tried to fight for that position, but he never really regained it. It was just once Rossi was passed, you know, he started building a lead. And he ended up winning almost by 3 seconds. So, and that includes the wheelie. So I think that he was really, he really did find something in that warm up. Lots of kudos to JB and the crew, and of course, you know Rossi too, because he's a very big part of that development.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, and it was. And with Rossi, like we said, he started off fourth on the grid, and he was basically fourth for the first couple of laps. Picked off Lorenzo on lap three.
Yep.
And, you know, started working his way up. But, yeah, it wasn't like he had this, you know, somehow gifted to him or something like that. You know, he had to work for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was really Rossi at his best.
Yes, it was. Know? This was classic Rossi watching this race.
Yeah.
You know. But in any case, okay, second spot was Danny Pedrosa.
So I should also say we both picked Rossi to win, so hooray us. All right.
Yes, yes.
Second place was Danny Pedrosa, obviously. He came in behind. And Lorenzo wasn't there because, you know, we might as well mention it, Lorenzo crashed on lap...
Oh, boy. Now 19? You're asking the hard questions. I think it was like that, yeah.
Sometimes, like 20? Left? No, it must have been like lap 24 or something like that.
Latter part of the race. Was very, it that late?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was behind Stoner, and he was starting to catch Stoner. It was actually looking like he might have enough laps left to catch Stoner. Which
it was on lap 23, lap 24, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, he really looked like he may actually catch Stoner, which would have been an amazing feat, because he was quite behind for a while. And he was obviously not comfortable, but he lost the front end and went down. And this kind of reminded me, like, you know, I've been actually singing his praises a lot to friends and family and stuff. And it reminded me, oh yeah, that's right. He does. He still has a bunch to learn and kind of respect the power that these bikes have. And
a little bit of a maverick, is as they call him,
yeah,
over Formula
that's
One
right.
blog. And
I mean,
yeah,
fits,
and
they call him that. They call him that because of the way he looks, but it's also because of the way he is.
Right.
You know.
And also on that one, they cut to an onboard. Just it was like it was planned.
Oh,
that's
right.
Did you notice
that? That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We were on board with him when he crashed.
Yeah, exactly. You're on board, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, we're not getting up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a little bit much. So yeah, bummer for him. I'm not sure how we jumped away from Pedrosa to
well, because I did that because Lorenzo. We both picked Lorenzo to come in second. That's why.
Ah, yeah, good point. So okay.
And anyway, and so I mean, in his defense, he this is the first time he's riding on Bridgestones. I mean, first year, so it's only the third race on Bridgestones, and you know, he pushed it too hard. That's all.
Yeah. Well, guys are going to crash. I mean, that's just a you know, it's the way life is. It's motorcycle racing.
But it is worth noting that I think there's 123,000 people in Jerez. They didn't get a single Spaniard to win any of the races, and they had, you know, so many, and they have so many Spanish riders in all three classes. So that was that was amazing. That must be a first.
And also, I mean, favored. You know, it's
exactly. That's right.
Right.
It wasn't just that there's a Pedrosa and Lorenzo in the race, but also like either one of them was picked for the winner. No, nobody was really expecting Rossi to win after QP.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's a good point. And but Pedrosa picked up the second spot, like we said. It's a little hard to describe. I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to say that, you know, the race was his to lose or anything like that. Just that's, you know, not a bit much. I mean, he had a good early battle going on with Stoner to a point. But, you know, well, like you said, once Rossi passed him, it was effectively game over.
Yeah.
Without quite being some humiliating romp. You know, it wasn't like that. I mean, Rossi was riding hard to stay ahead of him. But, yeah, it was effectively game over.
Yep.
So, second spot for Danny Pedrosa. You know, good to see him on the podium at least, you know, for his sake, but not winning.
He still looked very happy. I was surprised at just how happy he looked on the podium.
Yeah. Actually, that was a very jovial podium all around.
It was.
Watching the champagne and all of that business, it looked like these guys are really, you know, they're... Maybe because it was a good race, and they knew it was a good race, and they're back in Europe, and just all the other things. It was. It seemed like, you know, everybody. And Stoner said something that the third at Jerez was like sweeter than the first place in Qatar.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially, you know, talking about Stoner, third place Stoner. That was the surprise for me, because where did I have him picked?
You put him fifth.
I put him.
You had him fifth.
Oh yeah, wrong number fifth. Yeah, clearly off the podium and all of that. I just didn't think he was going to be able to fight back his whatever you want to call it, you know, bugaboos of Jerez, you know, so effectively. I didn't think that he would do that well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was quite a big gap between him and Pedrosa, but not nearly as big as the one between him and Depunier.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely the group of three. I mean, yeah, what was the final gap? Oh,
over 20 seconds.
Yeah, between him and Depunier, yeah. It was a long, long distance. And, you know, you figure the last lap and all of that, there was, like you said, the wheelie. I mean, Rossi did the classic look back over his shoulder, do I have room for a big wheelie? And he did, and all of that. So,
yeah.
Because going into that last lap, he was still... end of lap 26, Stoner was 8.3 seconds back of Rossi, which puts him a little over 5 seconds back of Pedrosa. So, yeah, that was a distance. But nonetheless, a hard-fought podium, good performance, and also telling that as far as the grid was concerned and as far as the race results were largely concerned, you had the Ducati on front, or in the, you know, near the front was Casey Stoner, and all the other Ducatis were at the back.
Did okay. I mean,
I meant, you know, Hayden on the other factory, and then the two Pramac riders. You're right. Gibernau was in the middle, ish.
Right.
All along. Yeah. Sorry, Sete, left you out there. But it's just, you know, again pointing out, playing up to this whole story that we've talked about with. That Stoner can ride the wheels off this Ducati, and everybody else, for whatever reason, you know, has some difficulties with it.
Yep.
So, all right. Let's see. Fourth spot. And actually, I said Stoner was a big surprise. I think this is the even bigger surprise. Fourth spot, Randy Depunier.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big surprise because, he did get an extra spot from Lorenzo falling, but so did everybody behind you know, fourth place. So, but it's not such a big surprise because he's always done well at this track. It's just that when he finishes races here, he actually
does okay.
Does well, does really well. And what's his name? Cicinello? Is that the team manager's name? Was very, very, had a lot of nice things to say about Depounier and the fact that he's really working on, you know, not crashing.
And the thing
we both had him like in 12th.
Yeah, so, exactly. You know, I was just looking at my notes, and yeah, I have 11th through 13th written here.
Yeah. I should say that I rearranged these things so that we actually had each spot filled.
Each spot filled. Yeah, yeah. We're going to try to work on that for our next review. Yeah. But whatever. I have my original source notes, which are a bit of a jumble. Randy's a good racer. When he doesn't crash, he can be counted on, even at most tracks, to at least put in a good show.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty rare that you see him, you know, just outright sucking. It's just the crashing part. You know, he crashes a lot. And I suppose I shouldn't say that I was, you know, stunned, but it was still, you know, hey, fourth spot.
It was also, I think, his best finish since, like, in like 2 years, so you know.
Is it? Yeah. And I'm just flipping down of who I actually had picked to finish fourth, and I didn't have absolute fourth.
Yeah, you didn't really have anybody there.
Yeah. That was one of the spots where I was kind of vague of the, you know, not on the podium, but up for top 10. So, all right, next up.
I loved seeing this.
Yes, yes, it was awesome. And the surprises continue because fifth place, Marco Melandri.
Oh, man, it was so wonderful.
That's good stuff. And, I mean, let's see, where did he qualify? He qualified 11th.
He qualified 11th, and not only that, but he fought with Edwards and Caparossi, who are really wily, very, very aggressive riders. And so the old Melandri's back, I think, you know.
Yeah.
He may not be able to, you know, win a championship on this thing, but, man, I think he's blowing everybody away. I think he's got a place in next year on some good team.
I agree that Melandri is showing what he can do. And
I mean, he's getting it done. I mean, really, fifth place. Where would we put him? I put him ninth. You put him ninth. So that was awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was cool to see. And it does. It's, you know, again, and it's not so much that I was surprised that Melandri. I know Melandri as Melandri is capable of this sort of performance. I'm just so skeptical about the Hayate / Kawasaki, you know, with the no development thing. And I mean, frankly, being a relatively somewhat back of the grid bike to begin with, you know, even if Kawasaki was working hardcore on this thing, it's not like they were doing all that great last year.
They weren't, so, but you know what? I have my doubts about the capabilities of Anthony West and John Hopkins on that bike. Not because they're not good riders, but because it was just the bike was just so new.
Possibly true.
And I think Melandri's probably a little bit more able to adapt to this particular configuration. I mean, obviously, he was not able to adapt to the Ducati ever.
No.
But he was fine. I think he was. Yeah. We could talk about this forever. There's lots of exclamations like woohoo! Melandri just rocked. That was awesome.
Exactly, he did. He did really well. And we've still got how many more races this year to hopefully also say good things about it and all of that.
Think about this. He is eighth in a championship and. He's really in a battle for fifth in the championship because he's only 7 points behind Dovizioso.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think anybody would have expected that even after just three rounds. So.
No, you're right. And I mean, three rounds out of 17 this year, you know, we're into the season. This is significant progress. So I agree. And like I say, I hope he can keep it up, that the team, you know, the whole thing
it's going to be hard together. It's going to be hard. After the summer break, it's going to be the hardest. So, there is a chance that what's going to happen is people are going to be so blown away by his results on this, you know, basically a bike that was expected to circulate last, that maybe some money will come in, and maybe there'll be some development on the bike.
Right. Yeah, so that's a possibility, I suppose. You know, if Kawasaki
doesn't have to be Kawasaki.
Yeah, that's true. Really, you're right. It's Hayate has taken it over, so I guess anybody could. We don't know the details of. I mean, there could be a lot of caveats of how that bike came to be.
Yeah.
The Hayate. You know, yeah. They might say no, you can't take the valve covers off or whatever. But and I'm sure that Kawasaki is involved in some way.
No, I think that they're going to get more involved if they keep seeing these results like this. This is what.
Oh yeah.
I mean, think about it. They didn't go out because they were winning races. They didn't leave MotoGP because they were winning races or doing well. They were struggling big time. I mean, fifth was the best finish they had all year last year, and it was a fluke. Everything else was like 13th or out of the points. I mean, so having Melandri finishing in the points every single round so far, and tracks that are very difficult for an underperforming bike, it's great.
Exactly.
But anyway, let's keep going. So we had Caparossi, we both picked him for seventh. You know, if it wasn't for Lorenzo crashing, we would have been right on.
Yeah, and I mean, I call it pretty good, sixth, seventh, close enough.
Yep.
And can't say that I was all that. I wasn't surprised by that sort of performance. I mean, qualified sixth, finished sixth, did. An admirable job because the guy's an admirable motorcycle racer, but he's on for all of its strengths and this machine is now all of a sudden it's just on the cusp of greatness and this and that, he's on the Suzuki, and I think that finishing behind Melandri
that was painful
might
for him,
sting
sure.
a bit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
As far as the entire team effort, particularly, is concerned,
yeah,
I'm sure that Caparossi respects Melandri as a racer, but like everyone else, he's probably thinking, God, the guy's racing, the backmarking motorcycle, and didn't finish ahead of it. But other than that, I don't recall.
Melandri took both Colin and Caparossi pretty much on the last lap, so I think that both those guys were like, "What?
What the hell happened there?" Yeah. Exactly. Then that has to somewhat play into their thinking a little bit. But, like I said, other than that though, I'm not, particularly surprised that, this is about you just said it. This is about where I expected Loris Caparossi to finish.
Yeah. No, I mean, he likes his track too. So, he actually could have done better.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course Edwards behind him, which we picked for eighth. So again, seventh, eighth, not bad.
Right.
I didn't get to see that much of him. Yeah, he wasn't very happy. I didn't get to see that much of him actually racing. There was a couple of shots of him when he was kind of on his own catching up to that group. So I don't know.
Which yeah, his that was one thing I've noticed it in Qatar and Motegi as well, but his bike looked so striking. I think that even though Rossi's got similar livery and all that, but the way Colin's number is and his leathers, I don't know. There's something about it where it just looks sort of meaner, almost maybe.
Yeah,
than Rossi.
Yeah. Then
Rossi got too much yellow going on out there. He doesn't look mean.
Oh yeah. I don't know that the yellow. I think yellow is a pretty angry color. It's like bumblebee,
yeah.
Whatever. So
yeah, I suppose that's true. But I don't know. It just doesn't strike me that way. In the color scheme, at least, that we got going on this year. Now, there was an issue with
the mapping?
Or was the mapping?
That was Motegi.
Was that Motegi? Oh yeah,
yeah. Which we forgot to mention last time we talked about Motegi, which was that it could have just been like human error because there was such a crazy amount of weather changes that. Colin Edwards started the race basically on a wet weather map, and this
right.
is a fuel map. So.
And the reason why I was sticking in my craw is because we had some emails, and this was Martin Darlington, that talking about, how amazing these bikes are, that basically it can sort of, you know, and we've heard this before, that, you know, they know from corner to corner, the bike knows, you know, that it learns. And it's like, well, we didn't have any wheel slip that last time. Let's give it a little more, that
right,
kind of thing.
Right, right, and, right. So eventually he was able to get a good pace going, but yeah. No, that wasn't this race. This race, I think that's why I'm kind of like, I didn't get to hear that much about it. I know he was disappointed about it, but...
Yeah, he made some comment like that, that didn't finish the way I expected or something along those lines, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, about where we put him. Eighth spot, Andrea Dovizioso.
Yeah, so I expected him to finish much higher. I had him for fifth. I think you had him for sixth.
Yeah, I'm looking where I put him.
But, you know, he was a 16th at one point, so finishing in eighth was actually pretty damn good because he went
miraculous.
Off. He went off in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. But again, not something that we got to see a lot of during the race.
Yeah, it was kind of a shame.
Progression.
He passed half the field pretty much. So that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah, this is where my idea of, you know, that they need to do stuff with picture in picture and things like that. You know, okay, show us the leaders, but let's see also what's going on elsewhere in the race. You know, and it can just be a little small corner picture. That's okay.
A few more years.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. We'll see. Ninth spot, Tony Elias.
Yeah, Tony Elias, you know, I keep bumping him up. You had him like 12th. I had him
10th to 11th, I said, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, in Spain, I just expect him to do well. I keep going back to that 2006 battle with him and Rossi in the 990s and just – oh, sorry, was that – No, that was 2007 because everybody was talking about, like, you can't do that on an 800.
But that was sort of almost the last time that he really made it work.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Well, and, we've seen it anyway. But he's back on that same bike, the same team. The bikes have evolved significantly since then. But, yeah, I was kind of bummed that we didn't see him finish it higher. I think that my initial impression earlier this season before the racing started was that he was going to be the top Honda, even over Pedrosa, and obviously that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, I tend to wonder, I mean, that, you know, Grassini going up against the factory team, and I mean, you know, you've got, you know, RDP on the somewhat lesser satellite, you know, the LCR team, if you want to rank the Honda satellite teams. I wonder if the bike is just simply developing in a direction that's not good for Elias.
Yeah, exactly. I think he needs a very special tire, first of all, and suspension probably is very different than anybody else rides. So that's very likely that he is in the factory bike, but it's a factory bike setup for Dovizioso and for Pedrosa.
Right. And if you're on the wrong factory bike, I mean, Nicky Hayden will be the first guy to tell you that, you know, that it's not going to work.
Yeah.
All right. 10th spot, Christopher Mulin. Qualified 10th, finished 10th.
Yeah, he was very unhappy about it. We had him 11th, actually, so we were pretty much expecting that.
I put him 10th, 11th on my little double marker grid rough draft that I had.
You know, basically, if Lorenzo hadn't crashed, we would have had great predictions here.
Much dead, right? Yeah. Well, as we were saying, even it was kind of boiling down to, you know, I know I was thinking of, like, well, that guy's going to finish ahead of that guy, you know,
right,
where they are. Well, you know, that shuffles up and down. But yeah, so anything else about Vermeulen that you kind of sticks out?
I mean, for me, Vermeulen is. Has been going downhill for, even though his victories came after his first season, he impressed me the most when he was on the Sito Pons Camel Honda for, you know, two or three races, and he just jumped in from Superbikes where he finished second in that championship and got on the MotoGP bike and really surprised people with just how fast he was. But that was, to me, the high point, because after that, you know, he got a factory ride. He's been on this factory ride for, 4 years now? And I don't know. He's had a couple of wins. He's kind of had a couple of great moments. But in general, his consistency really sucks.
Yeah, it's
and
well,
it's, and
yeah.
It's not like consistency because he crashes. It's just he just some tracks he just sucks at.
Right, and of course there's the rain thing. I mean, you know, he can be counted on to do well in the rain, and so those pop up as anomalies of good performance.
They do, but if you look at, you know, him in Laguna Seca, I mean, he's always great there. He's always, you know, a good bet for the podium or fourth or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's obviously some tracks that really suit him, and unfortunately, most of them don't. You know.
Yeah, I kind of wonder with Vermeulen about a bit of that, and I wonder how long he's got in MotoGP before.
You know,
they're
talking about Bautista coming to Suzuki.
Right.
Who's he going to replace?
All right. Well, you got Loris that's old, and Vermeulen that's mixed results.
I still can't see Loris leaving. He's
going to have to sooner or later.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, but not yet next year. I just see him as a really good last gasp for him to be with a factory team. Suzuki, I think, you know, probably was very excited to have him on there, and he's getting much better results than Chris is.
Right, exactly. So, and I mean, the guy brings a lot to the table too. I mean, the fan appeal and all of that.
He's a staple in the paddock. Everybody loves him. You know, I kind of heard some rumors that he's kind of a bastard, but. Okay. But, anyway.
Yeah, he's been a fixture in MotoGP for a long time.
Yeah,
and he seems, you know, he's does these little charismatic interviews and all of that. You know, best or not. So yeah, you're right, and that does play into a team's selection of, you know, who's going to be the rider big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. All right. Speaking of bastards and charismatic. 11th spot set to Gibernau.
Nice lead in there. Good.
I couldn't resist.
We actually really dissed Gibernau in our standings. I think we
and said, you know, but I actually really like Gibernau as a guy. I was so happy when he was coming back this year. It was
too. Me too. I still am.
Yeah, I am too. I Sete is great. Yeah. He really is.
No, I'm saying what did we really give him? Dissed him in the stand in our predictions.
I put him 12th to 14th. He finished 11th. I mean, that's
ballpark. So you were close. I actually put him on your list as 16th because I couldn't fit anybody else in there because you had so many 12 to 14s or something
so
like that.
So you rearranged my list.
Well, I had to put him in order. And,
yeah, right. I can't have five guys finishing 12th to 14th. That's what you're saying?
Pretty much.
Okay.
But yeah, I had him down 16th, which is obviously I underestimated him. You know, and I should have known. I mean, it's Jerez. You know, it's a track where...
That's going to be a big part of it, Jerez.
It's Spain. It's the fans. I mean, there were a lot of Sete Gibernau fans out there. I think all three. And...
All three fans?
Yeah.
Or...
come on. You got to remember the Liam Schubert...
I know. I was just thinking of that because we got Le Mans coming up, and that was he was driving to Le Mans when he was with the Sete Gibernau fan club. We should find that and replay that story.
That was fantastic. That was
a hilarious story.
That was one of the best
Liam was telling us about. Yes, but yes, the Sete Gibernau.
I think everybody except the girl had mullets. I guess even the girl had kind of a mullet.
But Sete somewhat changed his hair.
Oh, yeah,
a little bit.
He looks very different. He looks much more grown up.
Still has the puddle of mud looking thing. I just can't get that one out of my mind.
Yeah.
Need to check out MotoGPNews.com and see what they're saying about Sete.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
So, in any event, what did he qualify? He qualified 12th and finished 12th.
11th.
Or no, finished 11th. Finished 11th, sorry. So, it's, you know, towards this midsection of the grid, it seems like, you know, where they qualified was where they finished.
Let's not forget that he's actually on a Ducati that people have are in trouble figuring out. So,
oh yeah, I'm not at all trying to put down Sete's writing or any. I mean, because he's basically doing. He's the second best Ducati out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And no, I think he's doing a fantastic job. But I also think though that, you know, I mean, this is a relatively speaking, somewhat last-minute addition to the MotoGP grid. How much has the team sort of gelled? How much kind of support are they getting? There's so many, you know, factors that are playing into this whole thing beyond the you know, Sete's riding skill or not or what have you issues that I think he's doing very, very well. And then when you factor in that as well, that he took 2 years off.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's not, yeah. Yeah, it's not like he went to World Supers or something like that. You know, basically, in a nutshell, this guy did not ride a motorcycle in anger for 2 years.
Yeah, plus the last time he rode a motorcycle, they were bigger.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. GP, so.
No, he's doing super good. He's doing super, super great. And, you know, hopefully we'll see him, you know, break in the top 10. That would be nice. But, you know, even if he continues in this kind of, you know, 11th, 12th, you know, with the talent that's on the grid, I think that's respectable.
I can actually see him doing well in Le Mans.
I agree.
That's a track that he's done well in the past again. So I'll be looking
for him. He's got some real... you know, Sete Germinal classic tracks coming up.
Yeah.
I agree. I think we'll see some good stuff.
Yep.
All right. Yuki Takahashi, Takakrashi.
Takakrashi. Another great little
which was cruel.
Tidbit from Martin Darlington was...
Yes, we exchange a lot of emails with Martin Darlington. We really appreciate them, Martin. They're always entertaining.
Yeah.
And,
except, yeah, that you know, it takes like a day to read them.
Don't scare off Martin. I like Martin's
emails. No. Keep sending them. I just have to, you know, I just have to shuffle my schedule around.
And by the way, and I'll make a note to myself to put a link into this. Martin Darlington is involved in the HeliMed... I think is how it's pronounced. It's a charity ride, and I think he said that their website is up.
Oh, cool!
So
cool.
In England, if you want to go on a nice ride to support the medical, you know, medevac helicopters, we'll check that out, and I will put a link in their HeliMed website.
But anyway, so what he mentioned was I did not read this was that when they were picking up. Hayden at Motegi, and he was making some kind of gestures with his hands. He was actually throwing rocks at Takahashi.
Right, it looked like he was waving away the corner workers, or something along those lines. And that's what I thought was, yeah, he was actually throwing rocks at Takahashi. Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
I thought that was hilarious. So I was dying, and because I'm sure that Takahashi kind of dropped off Nicky Hayden's Christmas card list at Motegi.
Yep. But we didn't expect Takahashi to finish in the points. I think we both had him out of the points. And
right.
He finished, you know, 12th, which is pretty decent. That's his best finish of the year. You know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, this is a track where you don't need a lot of power, so like the bike didn't matter as much. It's really rider skill. And but you know, it is 12th. So it's not like
it's four championship points. And I mean, and when you look at the championship,
well, he's like 16th in the championship.
Yeah, Nicky Hayden's 17th.
Yeah, but they're tied on points.
What, you know, he's got some. So
Yep.
But all right. Next up, James Toseland.
Which we both picked for 13th, so he came in 13th.
Right on the money there. Perfect
not,
pick.
Not a big surprise. He wasn't so good. Didn't he finish 6th last year? That was part of his run of 6, I think.
I think it was. I don't have it open in front of me here. But yeah, Toseland overall is a bit of an anomaly, maybe. Is that the word to say? Maybe. Is this another guy?
For anybody out there who's having a drink while listening to MotoGP OD, from now on, whenever Bob says anomaly, you take a drink.
Do I say anomaly a lot? I say it as much as I digress?
Well, you also take a drink when he says I digress.
Okay. I like anomaly. That's a good word. well, in any case, James Toseland, is this another guy where the bike is developing in a path that James Toseland is not?
Interesting.
What's going
interesting.
On?
Interesting.
Right. And I kind of think that's a little bit what it is. I mean, when Toseland first came out of the gate and we're seeing these insane – World Superbike-esque, you know, fairing, bashing, gutsy, everything else. And it just, I don't know, maybe the cameras aren't on him at the right times and stuff, but it just is, not seeing that, something.
He's fairing bashing, but he's fairing bashing probably like way down the line. That's a very interesting point. I think that there's a couple of, so obviously Rossi has a huge input into the Yamaha.
I think Lorenzo has some input. And Colin Edwards is a fantastic development writer, so he has input.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's only so much input that you can take. You get too many cooks in the kitchen and everything goes to hell. So that's a very interesting point. I think that you may be onto something there. He has a very he's not like a radically different writing style the way, like, you know, Tony Elias is on the Honda, but he does have his own thing, and maybe it's not working for him with this bike.
That's a possibility. And when you line it up that way, you know, you got Rossi, Lorenzo, Edwards. You're right. There might be only so many ways, and Toseland, what they do for those guys is not working for him.
Yeah.
That'll
be a good possibly. Thing to kind of follow with this season. I just see what happens to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like that. I like that point.
Alex DeAngelis finished 15th.
14th.
14th. I keep looking at the wrong. I looked at qualifying. He qualified 15th, finished 14th.
Which is exactly where we had him. We had him 14th.
Right. And again, no surprises there. The big surprise, a little bit, of DeAngelis is, and I guess to a point, it was somewhat last year, and it's just that the crop of rookies was so, so great, and DeAngelis, you know, it just doesn't, he's not quite up there with those.
I'm very disappointed.
The sophomore class, if you want to call them that.
I'm very disappointed in his results, but I also think that basically Honda is just really just screwed this year. If it wasn't for Pedrosa kind of pushing at the top there, you know,
yeah,
they would be. I mean, let's see in the actual championship standings. If you look at those, you know, it's Danny Pedrosa's in fourth, and Dovizioso's in fifth. Oh, well, De Puni is doing okay, but then you drop down to 12th, and it's DeAngelis, then Elias.
I mean, team
you
standings.
Get Tahashi, my God, you know, it's terrible. Yeah.
But team standings, Honda second with a 12-point lead over Ducati.
Well, that's because there's only one guy riding for Ducati.
Right, only one guy riding on the Scotty Marlboro team, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. This is Honda's bet paying off. Honda developed that motorcycle for Danny Pedrosa. And you know, Danny Pedrosa's only come along so often. And
this was starting to get wasted too. So let's hope that
he holds
together.
You know, the puppet master strings are too tight or frayed or something. You know, there's a variety of issues going on. So yeah, they need to make sure that they don't leave. You know, the Gresini team in particular, and also, you know, Randy Dupuynier and even Takahashi on the two satellite teams.
Right.
You know, don't leave them out in the cold.
Yep.
So. All right, 15th finisher, Nicky Hayden. Picked up a point. So,
yeah, we had him 15th, so again,
yeah,
yay.
Exactly.
Yay us.
And he qualified 16th, so.
Yeah. So basically Lorenzo helped him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and there was another issue for Hayden. Hayden was also very, very disappointed with this race. He had a much better pace. I mean, he was up in the top 10. During at least one of the free practices. And so I don't know what really happened there to him.
Right. Well, because at Motegi, he sort of had a breakthrough. We were talking about, you know, that he felt like he was really coming to grips with the bike, this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets taken out.
Right.
And but it didn't seem to come together very well in Jerez. And, you know, this isn't like a track where you could bet, you know, Hayden's not going to do well or something like that. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, so I hope that things improve because this may be what, this may be maybe way too similar to,
Melandri.
The Melandri thing. Yeah. So,
oh, yeah.
I was imagining things. It was only FP2 that he did okay. And he did, he had a 10th and, 10th best time, right. FP2, which is that the colder one. So yeah, bummer.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we can only you know, it's never been a secret that I'm a big Hayden fan. Like we were saying, there seems to be a sort of a different side of Hayden that we're seeing this year a little bit. Maybe now that he's somewhat out from the Honda corporate thumb, he's going to behave a little bit differently.
Let's hope.
If that makes sense. What I hope is that this can translate into some halfway decent results, because I mean, realistically, how long is Ducati going to give him a shot? And you know, could this be the swan song? You know, world champion in 2006, and you know, basically after that. So I don't know.
And kind of before that too.
Wow.
He was kind of even off my radar until about 2005 when Laguna Seca, he got that win, you know.
I mean, yeah,
I was following him, but I was like, okay, yeah, he's this guy who, like, every once in a while he gets a podium or crashes.
Yeah. See, I was paying attention to it back in AMA days because, you know, I think the Hayden story, the brothers and all of that is an interesting one.
Yes.
But even his AMA championship, and I said this before, and, you know, not to take away from Hayden, don't want to hear from the Hayden fans, although there seem to be a lot less Hayden fans than there are Lorenzo fans. You know, he won that because Mladen had a shitty year. And he won the 2006 championship because Rossi had a lot of issues to deal with. You know, and I'm not saying that Hayden didn't deserve it or anything like that. It's a right place, right time, right attitude, everything else. You know, good racer, but not great racer, goes out there and manages to capitalize on the great racer having a bad season.
Right, right.
And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, somebody's got to win when Rossi's having a bad season. But unfortunately, I don't think that necessarily translates into that Nicky Hayden should be 15th the rest of the time.
No.
You know? No, he should be 5th, 6th, 7th. You know, he's as good a rider as Colin Edwards. And, to see him lagging behind on the Ducati, as I think as much as anything, the wrestling with the Ducati issue.
Yep.
So, and speaking of wrestling with the Ducati, coming in 16th spot, last finisher out of the points, Nicolò Canepa.
Yep. So we had him last. So
and
I guess,
hey, yeah. Guess what?
I mean, there were two people that didn't finish the race, so he got 16th, but he's still out of the points. Yeah, and then of course. Lorenzo and Calio. So let's talk about Calio first. So Calio just developed a rear brake issue or something, and just had to pull out. They
basically pulled out. They sort of took a look at it, but it seemed like a half-hearted look, even. And
yeah, exactly. He was already off the bike, kind of heading in.
Right.
You know, yeah. He
it was pretty quick. Yeah.
He was a little bit disgusted, I think.
Yeah, it was a little bit like Mika, we can fix this. No, I forget it.
Yeah.
and apparently he's also his style. You know, he needs that rear brake.
Yes, exactly. And he's learned to do a lot of steer with the rear kind of riding. So
right. And so yeah, once it he
used to race on ice, so. It's kind of like the Americans and Australians coming from the dirt background. He's coming from the ice background. So obviously, again, a guy who likes to step out the back, and you need a good rear brake for that.
Right. And a guy that's so incredibly talented. And I think we can see greatness. Let's see. He got what was the finishes in Kotaro Motegi?
They were both like eighth.
Eight points, and I'm trying to translate that into position. But yeah, which you know, rookie, in the MotoGP class
on the Ducati, on top of that.
And not even the true factory Ducati. For all they say that you know it's an equal effort, everybody's the factory bike, this and that and the other. There's still differences. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and especially as the season goes on and Stoner's not leading, you know, those differences are going to
Yeah, then there's going to be a lot of differences. Yeah. It's like, oh, no, that can't happen.
Yeah.
Wow, the conspiracy theories start already. but no, definitely a talented guy. It's always been fun to watch in the 250s. You know, so we'll see good stuff from Mika. But yeah, things like this aren't going to help.
He's way higher than I expected from him, actually.
Really?
I saw greatness in his 250 racing. I didn't see him as a real fighting spirit type of guy. Like most of the time, when he won races, it was just clean passing and you know,
yeah,
that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's fair.
Which is you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But no. I wouldn't put him in the same class as, you know, Tony Elias, for example, who will bounce you off the track if you get in his way and stuff.
So, give half a chance.
Which is not necessarily a good thing either, you know. But
right.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, so it was kind of a shame because he was in a good run as far as the other Ducatis. And where's he in the championship right now? Because of he just dropped out of the top 10 because of that.
Right.
8th place. Exactly. Finish.
Yeah. 11th
but
spot.
But he's still up there, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Hey. And it is, you know, despite, you know, 3 races, it's still early yet.
Yeah.
Got an interesting championship going on. Not sure that if I mentioned it during the call. I know I talked about it in the pre-call thing, but your analogy of the season as a whole, where you divide up each race, is it like a lap in a big race,
right?
And I really liked that analogy. I thought it was awesome. And you know, looking at it that way, we've had 3 different winners this season so far.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the kind of stuff you like. You know, I mean, Rossi is obviously mega consistent with 2 seconds and a first,
mm-hmm.
and consistency wins championships in MotoGP. But, you know, if you can be more consistent more times and win, then, you know, that's definitely going to get you the championship. But, you know, stuff like this. So now we just need Pedrosa to win a race, you know, and maybe, who knows, shake it up with somebody else coming up, like a real spoiler coming up from behind to win a race. And I think we've got an interesting season on our hands.
Yeah, although it's not going to happen at Le Mans.
No, it'll be...
It's going to be a Yamaha that wins the Le Mans. Let's just put it that way.
I agree. And we've got another... we'll do our review next show for Le Mans, so we don't want to get too much into that. Any comments on Lorenzo as our other non-finisher? I mean, we already talked about him earlier on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning just the growth of these rumors about Repsol... you know, trying to, I mean, just basically, I think Lorenzo just trying to up his value by shopping himself around a little bit already. I mean,
yeah.
Talk about early silly season. I mean, I think this is the earliest we've had it, but, you know, there's been rumors going around that are not exactly ridiculous about Repsol wanting to back Lorenzo. And I wanted to throw out a really crazy prediction out there, which is that 2011 Yamaha Repsol.
Ah, yeah, that might be crazy, but it would be interesting. Honestly,
Repsol's years would be kind of insane, but you know,
yeah. Repsol is a Spanish company. Repsol has always wanted Spanish riders.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, huge, right? And I mean, honestly, you're the marketing guy. You don't really care who wins. Well, you obviously want your guy to win, but, you know, if it's Lorenzo or Pedrosa type of a thing, which one are you going to pick? I mean, for the personality and the charisma and the, you know, let's sell some oil, right, side of things, I'd go with Lorenzo hands down.
Exactly.
And
there's no reason for Lorenzo really to leave Yamaha, because if you think about it, you know, Rossi's probably going to... I mean, there is a chance that he's going to retire at the end of 2010, right?
Sure.
And then who's number one at that point?
Right.
You know?
I agree. Yamaha's been good for Lorenzo. I think Lorenzo's been good for Yamaha. You know, he had a somewhat crash-filled season last year, but still, you know,
number
with the injuries
rookie.
And the crashes, yeah, still did great. And also grew a lot as far as being not a troublemaker, if that makes sense.
Hey, troublemaker is good.
What's that?
Troublemaker is good.
Not necessarily all the time where it's like, you know, getting in fights in the paddock and stuff like that. I don't know about that. We've talked about this a little bit
where
Lorenzo kind of surprised me. Of, you know, I was kind of looking forward to some of the drama, and it's like, you know, he didn't deliver.
Well, he's delivering on the track though.
He is definitely delivering on the track. And other than that whole Lorenzo Land silliness.
Oh, man, I love Lorenzo Land, dude.
It drives me nuts, dude.
I love it.
It's so silly.
Oh, we should mention that, you know, Rossi did have that his little celebration. He ran into the loo, into the porta potty at the end of the race. That was kind of fun.
What was the significance of that?
Well,
was there?
Well, you know, you have to go back way to, I think it was the end of his 250 World Championship season where he ran into the Lou.
Right. That he's done it before. And so, I mean, is that the only connection there? Is there some other brand?
I think so, yeah.
So it's
yeah.
not, I'm not missing some other.
It's like basically like, you know, kind of a replay.
Yeah, it's been a long race, got to go to the bathroom or yeah. something like that. It's not some weird Italian humor that I'm not getting or something. So, but
oh, so well, anyway, right. so with Loretto and the thing, I don't see him leaving Yamaha, but you know, Fiat's got they had a 2-year contract to start with, which is running out at the end of this year. Oh, sorry, ran out last year, which they obviously renewed, probably also for 2 years. So, at the end of 2010. Yamaha might be shopping around for a sponsor, and you know, Repsol might just say, you know, Honda, good try.
You want to go out on a limb? Here's the stupid, crazy limb, and I'll break this show out in 2.5 years.
Okay.
Chrysler Yamaha with Nicky Hayden. Fiat bottom. That thing's going to be a millstone around their neck.
Oh my
gonna
God.
Be like, we got to sell some of these damn things. Let's sponsor a MotoGP team with it.
Wow.
So
that's a good one. Okay.
Yes. I said it, going out on a limb. That was in all funniness, by the way.
I like it.
But if it comes to pass, it'll be completely a serious prediction. So run down the World Championship real quick. Might as well. Three races in.
So we got Rossi. He's taking the top, and he's actually got quite a lead because Casey Stoner, you know, finished third in this race, and he was not that close to Rossi to start with.
Right.
So Rossi's got 11 points, and they're going to Le Mans next, which is a track that Rossi really is good at.
You're coming up on several tracks that are just
very
Rossi-esque. Rossi's name all over them.
Like
yeah.
we got Mugello coming up after. After
well, that's
France,
that's a
whiz. That's going to be
yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. And Mugello, Catalunya, Assen. I mean,
well, Catalunya, yeah. you know, Catalunya is one
mixed
where
results.
Stoner has been able to take it to him.
Yeah, yeah, because that you know huge long straight, kind of a class, new not classic, but a new style Formula One track with you know humongous runoff and big straight stop and go corner kind of thing.
You know, this Lorenzo crash really just shook things up in the standings because he hasn't. Gained obviously any points, and Pedrosa gained 20. So suddenly they bunched up. You know, Lorenzo and Pedrosa are tied with Lorenzo having a win, so he's you know effectively third. And
right.
You know, and but they're you know 13 points behind Stoner now. So
exactly, and well, like we said, 13 points a big gap for only three races.
It is,
but these guys, Lorenzo and Pedrosa, they're going to be the spoilers.
Yeah.
They're gonna come in and mess things up for Rossi and Stoner, and hopefully you know we see this continue because it makes for more interesting overall you know championship following.
Yep.
And on points, what we got: Rossi 65, Stoner 54, and Lorenzo and Pedrosa tied on numbers at 41. But like you said, Lorenzo's officially third.
Yep, because of Mattia.
Dovizioso with a fifth spot at 30 points.
Colin Edwards 26.
Yeah. And then after that, it starts getting to be a mishmash. Randy Dupuy, 24. Marco Melandri, eighth spot, 23 points, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and wow, everybody has some points.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, we have to talk about the 250 race.
Oh, yeah.
Even though the call's getting long, but we do have to just quickly talk about the 250 race. It was just ridiculously fun.
It was. This was, again, going back to the old, you know, I've said it so many times, it's really old, but the race that you show your friends. it's the one, dude. Well, not the one, but I mean, you know, show them this race, and if they're not excited, then you know they're not even worth talking to anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It was fantastic.
It was.
And, you know... it wasn't just for the fight for the first place that was so amazing. So, you know...
Everything. All so, up and down.
Yeah, I mean, so we had Hiro Ayama take sweet revenge over Bautista because Bautista beat him in Japan. So what does Hiro do? He beats Batista on his home ground. That was fantastic, like little rivalry going there. And you know, now he's leading the championship, Aoyama, by 4 points, I believe. So that's awesome. But it was, you know, every spot was contended, because then Simoncelli and Barbara were decided on the last corner.
And I mean, overall for the top four, they were really in contention for most of the race.
Pretty much until the last lap.
Yeah.
Where Simoncelli made a mistake just going at the start of the lap and then had to fight over, or like two laps from the end, sorry. And then Barbera took over third, and then Simoncelli just snatched it at the end.
Right.
Until that point, they were on top of each other.
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, the last official lap that Simoncelli led was lap 19. But if I recall, there were still some lead changes in the middle of the lap
I'm just saying that he was ahead of Barbara pretty much. I mean, Barbara did not really challenge those guys until Simoncelli had this big mistake there. Almost fell off.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were some good moments in that race too, of like that kind of thing. It's just showing you that, again, the level of talent in the field and all of that. It was pretty much a group of four followed by a whole bunch of other guys. But it was incredible, you know, the whole race. There was a point in that race where I was jumping up and down. I can't remember the exact pass, but it was, that's good stuff.
Even further back, you go back like, 8 seconds back to the where Pacini and – because those four guys were just like way ahead. Even halfway through the race, they were already, the other guys were at the end of the straight when they were leaving the straight. I mean, at the start of the straight when these guys were leaving the straight. So, but then that contest between Luthi and Pacini was insane.
I'm not saying that the other guys were, sucky or anything, but it was, that there was pretty much the top four were in their own.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Little yeah. Group. I'm just saying that like this race produced fantastic results pretty much down the line,
Yeah,
There were very few people riding by themselves. I think, like, Mike DiMaglio, I think, was sort of on his own, I guess, but not really. Oh, anyway, so great race. Definitely check it out because it was fun.
Yes, it was. It was huge, huge fun. And if you haven't watched it, although we did just spoil the results for you, it's still...
Warning, should have watched it by now.
But no, it was a super good race, and I didn't get a chance to watch that one until like Tuesday night. So I'd been sitting around on the DVR for a couple of nights, and I watched it. And
texted me, and you were like, "Holy cow, that was a great race!"
yeah. It's like I finally finished watching the race at like 10 o'clock at night or something. It's like it takes jewels of like, "Oh my god, that was a fantastic race!" Because it was good stuff. And hopefully we're going to see that kind of action going on with the 250s in their swan song until we hit, the Moto 2. Which, speaking of Moto 2, it's official. And you'll be shocked by this news. If you haven't heard, Jules or folks out there, Honda got the
Honda? No way.
Honda of all factories, got the contract to make the spec motor for Moto 2. And I was amazed.
I am Jack's total lack of,
yes,
surprise.
I am Jack's lack of surprise.
The interesting thing is also that it's a quote unquote heavily modified CBR 600. So I think that we're going to hear something from the World Superbike guys about that. Oh, Super Sport. I mean, same group.
Yeah. But like, what kind of things do you think we're going to hear?
They're going to want to know exactly what those huge modifications are.
What constitutes heavily modified?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair. Probably stuff you can't do in Super Sport. I mean, come on. They're the rules on those classes tend to be fairly restrictive.
Yeah.
So, and then put it into prototype chassis, and you have yourself a racing class. I think it'll still be interesting racing. I don't think it's going to be, junk.
The biggest question mark is going to be what riders are going to be in this class.
Yeah. Because
that's what's going to really decide whether it's going to be a good championship or not. If we lose a lot of the good riders to MotoGP or even, superbikes or super sports, that would be That's a big, big shame.
Right. Well, and actually also, what is the purpose of the class? Is it still a feeder for MotoGP when it's – how similar – is it, you know, is it naturally still a feeder?
I think it's probably more of a feeder than the 250s. Power band is going to be very different. I mean, these bikes – I mean, I think they're talking about – now, I remember hearing that it was going to be like over 150, but I don't think they actually released an actual number. Anyway, that's a lot.
Yeah. And granted, also the prototype chassis will be a bit of a you know, it makes sense, mm-hmm. sort of a thing. But I'm still, you know, there's, I don't know, maybe this is where it's like, I don't know quite enough about what's going on as far as like, will the riding style suit it? You know, is this sort of a natural progression from, you know, the comparatively little bike up to the big bike kind of a thing? I don't know. And it seems to be a somewhat created class. You know, this sounds a little bit like some of the crap they're doing with the AMA, with these weird categories they have, where it's like, you know, wow, we really need, you know, a middle class that's not quite MotoGP, but is more than 125s. What are we going to have? Oh, let's do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, there's such a big question mark as to what that class is going to be like. I really think it's going to come down to what teams and what riders
are
going to be out there. But, you know, the good news is that there are a lot of teams that are willing to put up. I mean, these engines are going to be somewhere in the vicinity of about 20,000 euros. That is a lot of money, but it's not ridiculous.
Right. You know, well, then on top of that, though, you got to build a chassis.
Well, yeah, and you're buying multiples of these engines, but still. But the point is that it is within reach, I think, to a lot of engineering firms, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Ilmor give it another shot. You know, I don't think it's going to be a Priya or KTM, but
I was just going to say, you think KTM's going to come back, change their mind again?
No.
What about the rules of – what about – because 250s is a classic sort of series where, you know, you can just say we're going to go racing and you basically get a prepackaged motorcycle from Honda or Aprilia or whoever and you race it. So if you're not of – you know, if you're not equipped to sort of build your own chassis, what are the rules along those lines? Do they have customer chassis some way, somehow prepared for?
You know, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's going to come into play for a lot of these sort of smaller teams where it's not like these guys have, you know, a factory back home that they can just say, you know, let's whip up a chassis that this engine will fit in. So I'm kind of wondering about that. And I'm sure that it's somehow been addressed, at least I hope it has, because if they just automatically assume that this is going to be some kind of weird miniature Formula One where you get, you know, people to spend a hunk of money to build a chassis for an engine. Cause this is not, you know, it's not easy. It's not going to be something where you can just whip something up in the afternoon, you know?
Well, I think a lot of teams were already committed to doing something with Moto2. And so they're just going to adjust to the fact that there's a spec engine.
Yeah. Yeah. The spec engine is, like I said, is not the issue I'm talking about here. It's the building a chassis around.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that there's teams that have already committed to building a Moto2 bike to the point where they've already spent money on developing chassis and whatever. So I don't think they're going to back out.
No. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So yeah, those guys aren't going to back out. I kind of wonder what's going to happen with little guys. Probably should have done some research on this rule before I opened my mouth. But, you know, I'm sure that they, that it's been addressed. I mean, I can't imagine that they're just going to tell these, you know, these comparatively small potatoes teams that don't have this capability, right? That, you know, well, I guess you're screwed. You know, I really don't see that one happening. Somehow they'll have some sort of, you know, customer bike. You know, it might be a kit. You might have to get the engine from Honda.
Let's just say that, you know, there better not be a Honda out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because this thing has been developing for 2 years, apparently. I mean, that's, you know, kind of wacky.
Oh, I don't know. It was a huge surprise when Honda got the engine contract. Come on, Jules.
I know.
Yeah, I know. I still have my doubts a little bit about it, but I think it will. It has the potential to be good as far as good racing. And even if it does turn out that all of the current crop of 250 riders are gone because they've moved up to MotoGP or they say hell with this and they go to World Supers or something like that, there's still a pool, a wealth of talent in the 125s that I think are ready to move up and elsewhere for that matter. I mean, you've got a lot of really, really great series around the world where people would like to come up and play on the international scale. So it just remains to be seen. We'll see. And next year is going to be a real weird one with both bikes out there.
No, I don't think the 50s are going to be out there, actually. I think the latest kind of thing is that they're just not going to be competitive. No one's going to bother.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're going to be allowed, but I just don't see anybody actually going out there. Maybe some privateer will just to get some. But, you know, it's so expensive that... I mean, 250s are expensive bikes. I think that the consensus is that it's not going to be a mix class. It's going to be just the Honda.
Although on the other hand, we kind of thought that when we went from the 500 CCs to the 990s, and you still had 500 CC bikes going out there and winning.
Well, no, we didn't think that. There were teams that were definitely committed to actually racing. Whereas right now, we're not hearing anything about teams committing to racing 250s.
Yeah,
next year or so.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. That, I mean, it'd be nice. It'd be really weird because that'd be a lot different than the 500s versus the 990s.
Yeah, yeah.
Spec engine, all that kind of stuff. I mean, so many differences in the rules and, you know.
Yeah. It'd be weird. Yeah, that's true. That is true. So, all right. I think that about covers it for this evening.
Don't forget Monza this week.
It's not this weekend, though. World Supers. Exactly. World Supers at Monza this weekend.
Really, which we voted that one. That's one crazy racetrack, and we've got, you know, if when is Ben Spies going to stop the pole position run? That's my question.
That's a good question. That's actually a super good question. When is Ben Spies also going to stop crashing? You know, when or Ben? I mean. And Haga, the whole thing is so great this year. World Supers, Haga's incredible consistency that he's somehow developed, because Haga was the winner Bennett guy all along.
Oh yeah, you know?
Now he's just going out there and just putting in these stunning performances. But you know, hey, if he takes second, he takes second. You know, kind of a thing. And he's getting he's doing great in the championship, sizable lead, and all of that. Because Ben Spies is like, you know, literally pretty much win or bin. So, but yeah, this is going to be good stuff, and we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing this race again, these two races.
Well, all right. I guess that about does it for tonight. We seem to be both sort of drifting off. So I guess we'll talk to you again next week, Jules.
Fantastic. All right. Take care, everyone. Ciao.
All right, we had Peter Lenz on for the most part earlier in the show. This part here is with his dad, and Jules, we kind of jump into the middle of the call, but this is some good information. It's good stuff. Peter Lenz is a very interesting young racer, and so, you know, we thought it was worth including. So here we go, a little bit with Michael Lenz.
Doing what he's doing, I'm just, you know, step back and pretty amazed. But, you know, the thing is, it's, you know, you have the parental glasses on and say, it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's kind of like you look back at the kid pictures and say, man, my kid was cute, you know, and then you look back 8 years later and you go, oh, what was I thinking? You know, the baby wasn't that cute, you know, or whatever it is. And it's kind of like, do I have rose colored glasses? 'Cause you know, he's my kid, you know? And then, you know, that's why I ask people, it's like, okay, you've seen him ride, you know, you've seen him, you've seen what he's doing. You know, should we be doing this?
You've got results that kind of show you stuff.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like now he's actually riding against people that aren't, you know, been riding for 6 months or 2 weeks or whatever. He's riding against people that are, you know, 30, 40 years old too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little bit of a different gauge. So I don't know. We'll play by ear, see what goes on, and you know.
I was actually going to ask you about injuries, but and he broke his arm at one point, right?
No, it, I mean the thing is, it's like with the arm break, it's basically he was gridded on the second row. He didn't have a lot of practice time. Gridded on the second row, and he was the master of the hole shot. I mean, he had incredible starts, and he shot from the second row between the first and second place guy. And the first place guy came down on him and clipped his handlebar, so he countersteered into a bunch of bikes. It was like an 8-bike pileup, and you know, ooh, Peter got his arm rode over, right?
Ouch.
So it broke both bones, and you know, he was leading things like 5 Canadian national championships at that point, and had a ride with Metricut. And then that ride ended, and his championships went away, and he sat out for like 3 or 4 months and was just biting at the bit, you know? It actually, I think it helped him a little bit because it made him appreciate what he had. I'm a little more concerned just based on the fact that he's riding around people in the, you know, the F2 class or lightweight GPs riding around SVs, you know?
Yeah.
And he's a very small, you know, 85 pounds in gear.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So he's little. You know, he hit puberty, but he hasn't shot up yet, you know? So he's still a little kid. It's definitely a commitment. Well, I'll just leave it at that. It's a big commitment.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, he's I think he's very lucky that he's got a dad that actually the whole family that really puts up with with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, life. People see me, but it, you know, my wife updates the website, schedules all the travel, does that, works. Takes care of the girls while we're gone, you know, the dogs, the house.
Right. Yeah. You can't do it otherwise.
No, I think I got the easy part of it. And then Brian, who's the guy actually tuning Pete's bikes, you know, we're not paying him. You know, he's an electrician by trade, motorcycle enthusiast, good tuner, ex-125 GP racer, still actually rides. But, you know, the bike that Peter's riding is his bike. It's Brian's bike. You know, he loaned it to us for the year and said, okay, take my A bike. It's a 1996 RS125, you know, and go ahead and run it. And then on top of that, he's like, I'll come to the races as much as I can. And, you know, as long as he can do it. So it's, I mean, I kid you not, it's a community effort. And you look at the sponsors he has, all 20, I think we're like 25 or 26 now. Every single one of them is providing something, you know, to Peter, right? Be it full product or something else to enable what he's doing, you know. And without those folks, there's absolutely no way that he would be doing what he's doing now. It's just, it's impossible.
That's great, man. Honestly, I mean, he's only 11 years old, and he's already got this much behind him. It's just... It's hard to believe, but there it is.
Well, I mean, like you said, he has the results too. I mean, he showed up at Firebird and, you know, set the track record his second day. He showed up on Saturday, switched to Bridgestone tires, and set the track record Sunday in the last race, right? And the tires had like 110 laps on them, you know, something like that. And then when he went back to the USGPRU, he was running within 0.05 of that lap time, you know, consistently, lap after lap after lap after lap. So it's, you know, he's progressing, and he's got the mechanics, and I have no doubt that it's, you know, the program that Keith Cope put down, and the fact that when I talk to Keith, I'm like, okay, how long, you know, and he's like, well, to do it right, I need him for a couple of years. So, you know, the foundational stuff, kind of like if you think about Kung Fu, where they teach you like this move and that move, and then, you know, over the couple of years, they start putting them all together. That's what Keith's doing now. Yeah, it's like I said, it's a community effort, and I have no doubt that, you know, Keith is a huge part of it, as well as, you know, Rick at, you know, Pro Honda and you know, everyone else that's really just stepped up. It's huge.
That is huge.
It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I was kind of, you know, I was talking to Colin Sr., and I was like, okay, so, you know, what do I do here? And he's like, just make sure you raise a good person, you know? And that's where people ask me, it's like, oh, you're a racer. I'm like, no, I'm raising a son. I'm raising, you know, a brother. I'm raising a nephew. I'm raising, you know, someone that more than likely that someday will be a father. And, you know, number 8 on that list somewhere, or 9, is a racer, you know, after good person, honest person, forthright, you know, trustworthy, all that other stuff. So
happy,
just, you know. Yeah, exactly. It's like that's what was so phenomenal about Laguna, right? Is that he was looking forward to it and kept playing MotoGP, you know, and all that. And then, you know, that smile on his face, it's like I hadn't seen that in, well, at least a couple weeks. You know, just that was pure, unadulterated joy, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. And then he comes in, jumps on his ripstick, and goes play football with somebody, you know. And he's like, yeah, he's 11, you know, or, you know, it's like, I don't want to get up, or I want a Pop-Tart, or, you know, whatever. You know, it's funny. All right. Excellent.
All right, dude.
Well, thanks, man.
It was
Take
good
care.
Talking to you guys.
You too. Thanks, right. Man.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
And that's going to do it for tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you take a look at the website, MotoGPOD.com. There's a couple of links that I mentioned in the show. The HeliMid website, which is Martin Darlington's charity run that he does. And that's really, really cool stuff. And if you haven't got your Laguna Seca tickets now or yet, and you're thinking about going to Laguna Seca, take a look at the Power Sport Dynamic Turn 5 Chalet link that we've got going on there, because I think you're going to find that that's a super, super good deal. We did mention that briefly in the call, and we're going to have some more details on that coming up. But for now, there's a link on the website. Check it out. Thanks very much for downloading the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll check out World Super Dupers this weekend at Monza. And then next weekend, we're going to have MotoGP at Le Mans. Good stuff. So tune in next week for Jules and I to talk about a race preview, and we'll do some more predictions and stuff, because that's kind of turning out to be pretty fun. And until then, keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and we'll talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.